Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Larry Massett. Pigs are like Brussels sprouts. You're either for them or against them. Most people where I live are negative. Sloppy, slothful, dirty, greedy, gluttonous, piggy pigs, that's what they say. But in other neighborhoods, opinions run the other way. For instance, in Papua New Guinea, people keep baby pigs around the house as pets. Sure, they eat them after a while, but first they cuddle them and cradle them and tickle their chins and scratch their tails and do all the stuff we do with baby dogs. Dogs they don't like. Their dogs are dirty, greedy, sloppy, slothful. They have all the faults of our pigs, and the Papuans keep them around mainly so they can criticize them. An anthropologist I know told me he once, while living in a Papuan village, whipped out a Polaroid of himself and his giant basset hound back home. The villagers gathered around and exclaimed, "Oh, what a lovely pig!" "It's not a pig," said the anthropologist. "Look. Look at the long snout. Look at the floppy ears. It's a dog." "No," the people said, "look again. You've got it in your arms. You're petting it. You love it. Obviously, it's a pig." Well, our story today from producer David Barron is about a troubled pig. This is the wild pig, the feral pig of the Hawaiian Islands. So join us now as we visit Pigs in Paradise.
Ed Misaki has come to inspect his rainforest on a mountain on the island of Molokai. As usual, it's raining.
We're at about 4,000 feet in elevation. Very wet up here. You can get up to 200 inches of rain here.
Misaki is a biologist with the Nature Conservancy, a nonprofit organization that has managed this preserve called Kamako since 1983. The forest is thick with life. Moss and lilies cover the ground. Giant tree ferns unfurl their fronds 10 feet into the air. Ohia trees tower even higher, forming a canopy of their olive-colored leaves and crimson flowers.
You look around this forest and over 90% of what you're seeing is endemic to Hawaii.
It's found only here.
It's found only in Hawaii. That means if the components of this forest disappear, you can't go anywhere else to replace it.
What makes Hawaii's forest so special isn't just what's here, but what's not. Hawaii is the most isolated island chain in the world, separated from the nearest continent by 2,500 miles of open ocean. The life forms that came to colonize this land before the arrival of people were those that could, on occasion, survive a trip by air or water across the Pacific. That meant primarily plants, insects, and birds.
Consequently, Hawaii has no native mammals other than one that is of the air, the bat, and one that swam over, obviously, is the monk seal. There are no native amphibians. There are no native reptiles except the sea turtle.
Because there were no large land animals to contend with, evolution took a different course here. Hawaiian species lost their natural defenses. Many birds lost the ability to fly. Plants lost their poisons and thorns.
This is the Hawaiian name is akala, and it's a native raspberry. Now, if you're from the United States, and every raspberry bush that you ever come across has thorns, and if you look at this guy, and I'm running my hand over the bark here, and it doesn't have a single thorn on it. Look at what we found here. This is a not quite an adult yet, but this is what we call kahuli or pupukuahiwi, which is a tree snail.
Yeah. On the bottom of that leaf.
Yeah.
It's got little zebra stripes. Looks sort of like it's brown and beige.
These snails are a good indicator of what's been happening. At one time, the snails used to be very abundant in this forest. Today, they're very rare. And so this is almost like the canary in the cave, you know. Something's happening. Something's not right with the forest that's causing some of these species to disappear.
The ancient Hawaiian creation chant, the Kumulipo, describes the evolution of hundreds of creatures, from fish in the ocean to plants on land to birds and insects in the air. Many of these species, known to native Hawaiians centuries ago, no longer exist.
O talipo lipo, o talipo lipo.
Hawaii is losing species so fast, scientists call it the extinction capital of the world. The tiny island state makes up a fraction of a percent of the total U.S. land area, yet it accounts for almost 75% of all recorded plant and bird extinctions in the entire nation. Hawaii today is home to more endangered species than any other U.S. state. There are many reasons for Hawaii's high rate of extinction, including the clearing of forests for farms, ranches, and resort developments. But biologists say the number one threat to Hawaii's species today isn't people, it's pigs.
Oi! 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 Come, come, come!
Lloyd Case stands on a hill near Waimea on the Big Island of Hawaii. He comes here often to beckon pigs. They're not the kind of pigs you'd see on a farm. They're black and hairy with long, pointy snouts. They usually run the other way at the sight of people, but Case has trained these animals. They know he'll have something to feed them.
The wild pig is the third most smartest animal in the world.
You're cutting off little pieces of apple to give to them?
They love apple.
Case's family has lived in Hawaii for 1,500 years, and so have the pigs. The animals were brought to these islands by the first Polynesian settlers, who carried them across the ocean in their canoes.
This animal has walked with our ancestors in ancient times. And so much of our culture is built around this animal.
Do you actually kill these pigs from time to time?
Yes, we do. I have no pets. I was taught that way. Although they're very friendly, and some people fall in love with pigs like this.
An estimated 100,000 wild pigs roam the forests and grasslands of the Hawaiian Islands today, far more than ever existed in ancient times. And the animals are much bigger than they used to be. The relatively small Polynesian pigs interbred with larger European ones introduced to the islands in the 1700s. Hawaii's pigs are out of control, scientists say. These animals that have been here for a millennium and a half now threaten to destroy the plants and animals that have been here far longer.
So we're standing at the edge of an area that obviously the forest is dying. It almost looks like a bomb landed in here.
Ed Misaki has brought me just outside the Nature Conservancy's Kamako Preserve, the lush forest we were in before.
This devastated area was the same kind of forest. It's just...
This used to be rainforest?
Yes. I mean, you can see all the tree stumps in here. The dead trees that we're looking at are all ohia trees.
These are the same trees that we saw before with those beautiful red flowers. And now they're just these bare stalks of wood.
Right.
Misaki says this destruction is the work of pigs, many of them over many years, digging up the soil in search of earthworms and insects, creating pig wallows to take mud baths in the forest floor, and eating the native Hawaiian plants, including the pig's favorite, the tree fern.
Here's one that saw its fate. Imagine about a 6 to 10 foot tree fern down, it's eaten out the core, the tree thing's now dead. This is what the pig did.
It's completely trampled.
Yeah.
And the inside is
gone.
It's gone.
That's their staple, the starch there in that fern.
And it looks like someone came along and literally tore it down with their hands and left the pieces scattered.
Mm-hmm.
And one pig could have done this?
Oh, one pig did this. This is the work of one pig.
Because Hawaii's plants have no natural defenses against large animals, they're easily killed by the pigs. And as the pigs destroy the native flora, they clear a path for non-native plants to take over. These are plants imported to the islands in just the past few centuries.
You can see as the tree ferns go down and as other native species go down, the other, like this thimbleberry starts moving in. See all the thimbleberry moving in.
Unlike native plants, the low-growing thimbleberry, with bright red fruit that look like raspberries, is well-suited to living with pigs.
Why don't you touch it and see if it has thorns on it?
Okay.
Oh. and it's very good tasting, actually. Why wouldn't a pig not eat this? Spread the seeds around.
What do you see?
He's feeding.
Oh, yeah.
One of our, huh?
He's banded, huh?
Yeah.
Those up right above us right now, that one that just called, that sort of raspy call, is an ivy. The adults are a bright scarlet red with black wings, and they have a long decurved beak that's a salmon color. Really beautiful birds.
Ornithologists Carter Atkinson and Bill Eco work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They've come to the grounds of a prison on the slopes of Mauna Loa volcano because it's one of the few remaining places to study many native Hawaiian birds. The birds found here, including the i'ivi, omau, amakihi, elapaio, akepa, and the Hawaiian creeper, were once common. Today, some of these bird calls can be heard virtually no place else but this one forest.
That was in Akeapala'a, one of the endangered ones. It just sang a full song. He's over about 100 feet over there. That's it. That's the most one of the most endangered ones you're likely to encounter on this island. There are about 2,000 left.
Hawaii was once home to at least 140 native bird species. Today, half are extinct, and almost half of those remaining are listed as endangered. Here, too, scientists blame the pig. Pig wallows and hoof prints in the dugout cores of tree ferns collect water. These puddles, which don't normally occur in the rainforest, help mosquitoes breed. And the mosquitoes, Carter Atkinson says, spread diseases to the birds.
Last year, the mosquito populations just skyrocketed. The same time that happened, we started to find dead native birds on the sides of roads and people's backyards. Some of them were still alive, and the ones that were alive were suffering from malaria. Almost all of them had lesions on their feet that are caused by the pox virus. If they're big enough, they prevent the bird from actually using its feet. If they occur around the eyes, they might cause blindness. Around the beak, they might interfere with the bird's ability to feed. It's a pretty pessimistic, pretty sad situation.
The National Park Service has declared war on the pigs, and this is the front line. A team of workers is repairing a fence that cuts through the rainforest in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. The fence doesn't look very imposing. It's made of wire mesh about 3 feet high, strung between metal posts. But it's enough to trap the enemy.
We build fences to enclose an area of forest, in this case about 500 acres, and that's what we did here in 1983.
Dan Taylor is the park's chief of resources management.
Pigs that were unfortunate enough to be inside the fence were removed. That's a polite word of saying they were killed.
Hunters with trained dogs kill most of the pigs. The remaining ones, they're usually the most cunning animals and can outsmart the dogs, are caught in snares, wire nooses set out to strangle pigs that stumble into them. Hawaii Volcanoes National Park has spent 10 years and more than $1 million fencing off 18,000 acres of forest. Dan Taylor says in another 15 or 20 years, the entire park could be pig-free.
Pigs will not be tolerated in parks, period.
The state of Hawaii and the Nature Conservancy agree. They, too, are removing pigs from thousands of acres of forest. While no one believes pigs can be eradicated from the entire state, biologists hope to save the most pristine forests before the animals cause irreversible damage. In most parts of the world, in the Amazon, for example, or in Alaska, when scientists try to save native ecosystems, they have the support of the native people. But in Hawaii, things have turned out differently.
Bring your chair in.
Okay, please, yeah?
Some hunters on the island of Molokai have invited me for dinner so they can tell their side of the story over beers and a meal of pork cooked with squash and watercress. These men who routinely kill pigs are fighting to save them.
People here on Molokai had always depended on wild game for part of subsistence because, you know, the economy here on Molokai is real low.
And a pig is, it's one way of hunting that people here have been doing for generations. And besides you going up there, getting a good time, enjoying yourself in the forest, you're putting food on a table, you know.
Pigs have been here 1,500 years, and Nature Conservancy wants to come in and change it overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they're claiming is that these pigs don't belong here. These pigs are alien species, and they're destroying the native species that were here long before the pigs ever got here.
Now, that's a lot of bull as far as that. I've been hunting up there over 45 years. I never did see any part of the forest where it would get damaged and not regrow. Now, these guys here, like I said, they're using a pig as a scapegoat. I mean, what about the birds picking up the seeds, flying over? They go much farther. They drop the seed, you know. Non-native plants are growing. I mean, there's no way they're going to stop it, you know. No matter what, it's going to happen.
The hunters have held town meetings, lobbied their legislators, and written letters to local papers calling for an end to pig eradication. They've enlisted the help of animal rights activists who helicoptered into a remote section of Molokai and removed more than 700 pig snares the Nature Conservancy had put on its land. Now the hunters are drafting legislation that would declare the pig a native animal, just as worthy of protection as Hawaii's birds and plants. Hunter Walter Riddy says the scientists, in their attempt to save native species, threaten to destroy Hawaii's native culture.
They're going into our schools and they're teaching our kids that the pig is the enemy. We have to kill all the pigs. Is it really the enemy? That's not what I was taught.
What were you taught?
We call it the pua'a. It's not only the pua'a, but it's kamapua'a. And kamapua'a was revered into a god position, a creator of land for us, a creator of soil, actually. I mean, we have dances and chants and songs. So what are they teaching my kids in school now? You know, it's something totally foreign.
It's early Saturday morning. Three young brothers and their five dogs are heading into the rainforest. They hike up a steep ridge along a narrow, muddy trail that's barely visible through the ferns growing shoulder high. One brother has a rifle slung over his shoulder. The Kaholoa'a brothers are after pigs. It's clear the animals have been here. The soil has been dug up, and there are occasional hoof prints. But the pig signs look old. The brothers and their dogs walk on.
Where are we going to go when we don't have any pigs to get anymore? To the supermarket? It's too expensive for us. A lot of the hunters here are subsistence hunters and not doing this for sport or recreation. We're doing this for livelihood.
Pua Case is a kumu hula, that is a hula teacher and keeper of native culture. She comes from a large family of hunters on the Big Island of Hawaii.
There are many traditions that we still follow today that keep us intact with our ancestral culture. Any important event, a pig was a sacrifice for that event, whether it be the building of a house or a canoe, a feast for a child when it was newly born, a feast a year after a person passed away. The pig was always included in each event. We are trying to keep alive our culture, I will state that. And we're not going to let it go without a fight.
After an hour on the trail, the Kaholoa'a brothers stop at the edge of a steep ravine. Several of the dogs are missing. They've apparently run off into the woods. The hunters peer into the forest below and listen.
Stay still.
The brothers dash down the slope, running between trees, through mud, and over fallen logs. Ahead, in a small grass clearing, the dogs have pinned down a pig. It's a large black sow that probably weighs close to 150 pounds. The dogs are holding it by its face, their teeth gripping its cheeks and ears.
Nice pig. I won't keep this pig. Good for smoking meat. I won't kill him, then I'm gonna let the dog go. Pick up some more pigs.
How are you gonna kill it?
Kill it with my knife. Fucking knife.
The Kumulipo, Hawaii's creation chant, praises the pig as a tiller of the soil and a symbol of fertility. While scientists view the pig as a pest, an intruder, an alien, Native Hawaiians view it as an integral part of these islands. The pig may not have evolved in Hawaii, but they ask, how long do you have to live in a place for it to be considered your home? Isn't 1,500 years long enough? And aren't all of Hawaii's plants and animals the descendants of immigrants, whether they arrived hundreds, thousands, or millions of years ago? And what does all of this say about Hawaii's indigenous people? Again, Pua Keis.
If the pig doesn't belong here, then you'd have to say that the native Hawaiian doesn't belong here either. They were brought over the same time as us, the native Hawaiians. It was brought over by us. We are the host culture of this land, and that includes the pig. To eradicate the pig is like eradicating us.
The pig that the Kaholawa'a brothers caught is lying on the forest floor. It stopped moving. The two younger brothers, Kili'i and Kunio, are preparing to gut the animal. They say it's better to do it here so there's less weight to carry back to the truck. They slice open the pig's belly.
It was just ready to give birth.
Just ready to give birth?
Yeah.
Can you see how many piglets there were?
No.
A couple.
Yeah. Fell a plenty. All underneath here, too. It's about 8 or 9.
Kili'i cuts open one of the amniotic sacs to expose a perfectly formed little pig covered with black hair, its eyes closed. A full 10 minutes after its mother died, its heart is still pumping. Kili'i cuts the umbilical cord.
Prince 151 cleared to Honolulu Airport via Victor 8. Center frequency will be 124.1. Squawk 1026.
Before I leave Molokai, Ed Misaki of the Nature Conservancy wants to show me something that can be seen only from the air. We head by helicopter up a broad slope toward the northeast. The dry, flat land quickly turns lush and steep, cut by deep ravines. Soon we're flying above the mountains and the rainforest with its dying tree ferns and ohia trees. As we reach the top of a ridge, the helicopter flies into a cloud. Suddenly, the air clears.
Oh my goodness! It drops off into nothing. How high are those cliffs?
Oh, 3,500 feet.
Those cliffs look like they're completely vertical.
They are.
I've never seen land like this before. This is absolutely breathtaking. The mountains go up to just sheer points. I see waterfalls.
Now straight ahead, that mountain straight ahead of us, that's supposed to be the most pristine place in Hawaii. It's called Olokui because it's steep on all sides. No animals have been known to get to the top of it yet.
This small green plateau is believed to be the one native rainforest in all of Hawaii that has never had pigs. In 1,500 years, the animals have colonized virtually every inch of these islands, from sea level to altitudes over 10,000 feet, from forests to grasslands to deserts. This 1,600-acre parcel of land, rising above its surroundings and overlooking the Pacific, is what's left of Hawaii as it once was.
Pigs in Paradise was produced by David Barron. Special thanks to WBUR-FM in Boston and engineers Gary Wallach and Mark Navin. The Kumulipo was chanted by Franklin Powell. This month on Soundprint, we are offering brain teasers, little puzzles which you can solve and send in your answer for a prize. Today, instead of a new riddle, we are serving up one from ancient Greece. It's one of Zeno's paradoxes, and it dates back to the 5th century B.C. Let's say you're on one side of the room and you want to get over to the other side.
Well, no problem.
You start walking, and after a little while, you've covered half the distance. It's nice, but there is still some distance left, and next you have to cross half of that. And you do, and so now you have gone one half plus one fourth of the total distance. But you keep going. You walk half of the remaining distance, which takes you one half plus one fourth plus one eighth of the total, and the next half takes you one half plus one fourth plus one eighth plus one sixteenth, and by now you can see what's going on. These fractional subdivisions keep getting smaller, but they never come to an end. It's an infinite series. No matter how minute the distance, it can always be divided in half, and the remainder can be divided in half, and the truth is, you just can't get there from here. This is known as the paradox of the infinitely small, and it is extremely irritating. We all know we can get from one place to the other, and yet, well, if you think you can solve the paradox, go ahead. Though I must remind you that people have been beating their heads against it for thousands of years. Better yet, think of a way to insult it, to smack it on its ugly little snout. The best put-down I have heard so far comes from Queen Sophie Charlotte of Prussia in the 18th century, who, when presented with this problem by her math tutor, replied that, having been born at court and having lived among courtiers all her life, she was so familiar with the behavior of the infinitely small that she didn't need math to explain it. Well, you take a shot. Send us your best effort no later than August 16. Write Brain Teaser, care of Soundprint, 2216 North Charles Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21218. You can also reach us on internet, where our address is soundprt, that's S-O-U-N-D-P-R-T, at jhuvms.hcf.jhu.edu. And if you have a problem with the internet address, just give us a call at 410, area code 410-516-0833. We'll set you straight. You can also use that same number to order cassette copies of Soundprint programs with a credit card. Entries will be judged by Soundprint staff on the basis of creativity and originality. Anyone can enter except the unfortunate employees of Soundprint and National Public Radio. 5 lucky winners to be announced in October will receive a subscription to Outside Magazine, the active lifestyle magazine dedicated to inspiring people to enjoy fuller, more rewarding lives. Sports, adventure, events, people, politics, art and literature, and the world outside. That's what you'll get if you get anywhere at all. Soundprint is technical producer Anna Maria de Freitas, senior producer Nina Ellis, and researcher Debbie Morris. The studio engineer is Robin Wise. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Larry Massey. Soundprint is produced by the Johns Hopkins University with support from the National Science Foundation and radio station WAMU-FM in Washington, D.C. Additional support for this program is provided by this and other National Public Radio member stations and the NPR Information Fund, whose contributors include the Bullitt Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.